For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cut Day on the Stargazing Podcast. Training camp's wrapping up. We're rounding into regular season form, and it's time to take a serious look at the roster as we head into the season. Joined, as always, well, as most of the time, by Mark, and then brand new contributor, head of the European division here at DBD, Uri. How are you doing?
Well, hello, everybody. I'm doing pretty great, actually. It's Saturday evening here, and I have no time limitations, so looking forward to talk some Stars hockey.
You got, I think evening might be a little bit generous to us. It's inching up on midnight, if my time zone calculations hold. Is that right?
Yeah, but you know, I really do not sleep at all when the Stars season starts. So,
how can you sleep the way the Dallas Stars play, good and bad?
Yeah, I mean, one of the toughest things to do was to watch some boring games during night and not to try fall asleep, you know.
So Rick Bonus is gone now, so you should be fine.
Oh man, I should hope so, right?
Oh, we should all hope so. Well, there's a lot to talk about as we're hinting around it a little bit. Obviously, we're going to do some getting to know you stuff. I'd like to give our newest contributor a chance to I know you've already had a couple of first-rate articles out of the gate, but give you a chance to kind of introduce yourself to the podding audience. We're also, I mean, we've got a lot to talk about in terms of Dallas Stars roster. We're going to talk about the preseason to date. We've got some cuts coming up next week, so a lot of what we say is going to immediately be either prescient and amazing or completely wrong and stupid, which is about normal for us, I would say. And we'll talk a little Stars and things are kind of getting serious. And I want to start with general, you know, there have been some announcements coming today, at least in terms of a couple of players are starting to leave camp. More departures are expected as we get closer to the regular season. This is generally the time in preseason where teams kind of trim some of the real outside shot guys and really narrow it down to people that they're taking a hardcore look at. So as we sit here today, and I'm not going to go through, you know, if you want the exacts, right, Matt DeFranks on his Twitter had the actual list. You can look it up and find it. But there are a couple of names on there that will obviously focus on still being part of the mix, right? That's Bork, Johnston, Stankoven are all still very much in the mix still on the roster. Jason Robertson is still not, as well as some of the old faces that you would expect, right? The Bens and the Sagans and the Pavelskis of the world. So the first question out of the gate, and we'll start with you, new guy, what has really stood out to you so far in Dallas's preseason?
Well, and thanks for the intro, by the way. What has stood out is probably one man, and it's Pete DeBoer, obviously. And it's just because it was really such a fresh change, mainly to hear some of the things that he had to say, and also the style of the play that they are trying to implement. That's why I'm not overly concerned about the results at all. And also, like, Dobby was in the net for the two games at home, which he wasn't really at his best at all, or near his best, unfortunately for the Stars and for Don Jim Neal as well. But the process and the style of play that they will play maybe in October, November, that's what I'm really looking forward to. And I think they are on the way to get that level pretty soon, also with the newest acquisition of Nils Lundqvist, which will be probably one of the biggest catalysts for me to really try to implement the DeBoer style. And really, I'm honestly looking forward for the change of style of play. So that's what stood out to me. And I'm really not overly, as I said, not really overly concerned about the results, but if I see the process is taking on and it's and players are getting used to it, so maybe we can even see like new coming of Radek Faksa. Who knows? So that's what I'm really looking forward to.
He did have some quotes about how excited he was to play offense and maybe he'd get some of his confidence back. I think that the process not results is a great way to focus on this and also to bring Mark into the conversation. Is that something you agree with, Mark?
Oh, absolutely. And I think there are a few key areas that I'm paying attention to, specifically with Stankoven and Johnston. I think a lot of what their short-term future with the Dallas Stars is dependent on is Robo's signing. And I think it's entirely possible that we might see one of those two. And here I think it's probably specifically Wyatt Johnston, that he will take Robo's spot and maybe even get a full 9 games in as Robertson makes his way back into the Stars lineup after, fingers crossed, we get a contract signed. And so I think if Robertson was signed, we wouldn't be sitting in this position where you would think that Johnston or Stankoven would be sticking with the team once things down to a full NHL roster. But I think one of those two has an excellent shot right now.
Yeah, I mean, and I know nothing, right? This is not a comment born out of any kind of insider information, but just looking at the way that he's been deployed, listening to the way that he's been talked about by, DeBoer, by even Razor and the announced team, it really feels like this team wants Johnston to make the lineup, if that makes sense.
I don't know that they want him to make the lineup. I think that he probably fits better into the lineup, especially if Robertson's not around, than Stankoven does. Obviously that could be wrong. I think a lot of Dallas Stars fans want to see Johnston in the lineup. But if I'm going through the list of players out there, if Robertson's around, I just don't see how they give up a year on his entry-level contract.
What do you think, Uriah?
Jim Neal seems pretty relaxed when it comes to Jason Robertson's signings, and I was wondering why. And I think
I have a theory on that, if you don't mind jumping in. So earlier this week, the NHL announced a kind of projection of the salary cap for the next couple of years, and I'm trying to dig up the here we go. And trying to dig up the exact figures, but basically over the next couple of years. So this upcoming season, the cap's going to be just a shade over $82 million. It's $82.5 million. We'll get a $1 million increase next summer, and they're anticipating a $4 million bump in 2024 and then a $5 million bump in 2025. So we're looking over the next, by the time we get to the 25-26 season, we're looking at an almost $10 million jump in the salary cap. That's kind of what the NHL is projecting. So my theory on that is that's obviously fantastic news for everybody, right? Because, more money, fewer problems. But specific to the Dallas Stars, that I think means, if it pretty much locks us into, there's around $6 million or so left for a Robertson extension today, right? And if we look at 25-26, Jamie Benn's contract is off the books by then. Radek Fox's contract is off the books by then. So is Esa Lindell. So is Ryan Suter, right? So if you are Jason Robertson and you're thinking about the kind of deal that you want to sign to maximize your earnings, and maybe he's not thinking this, but he probably is, then it seems like something in terms of a bridge makes a ton of sense, because the pool of money, right? I guess you bet on yourself, right? If he takes a bridge, continues to play well, there will be $10 million more in a vacuum available for him to draw from. Plus, there will be, a gigantic pile of money left as the, some of the legacy deals on the Stars roster begin to expire. So from Robertson's standpoint, makes a ton of sense to pick a bridge of some kind. And honestly, from the Stars standpoint, sort of makes sense to do business that way as well, right? Like, yes, sure, if he wants to sign an 8-year, $1 million a year deal, if you're the Stars, you take that whistling. But, looking at the business reality, they're going to have more flexibility in terms of what they can offer him at the expiration of a bridge too. And yes, they will sacrifice some cost certainty. And yes, it will be more expensive to sign Jason Robertson in 3 or 4 years than it will be to sign him, right now. But from a team perspective, you can probably, that deal, though a larger dollar value, will probably be a smaller percentage of your cap. So from both the player's perspective and the team's perspective, it seems like we're really narrowing down the, in terms of the time frame, what they're looking at. And you know, there's still no advantage really in, you know, there aren't any, you know, good team. You know, there's a rumor floated that Buffalo, right, could make an ideal trading destination. Well, if you're Jason Robertson's camp, do you want to go, you know, the places that could pay you aren't the places you want to go, but after a bridge deal, that whole thing changes, right? So my gut is that in the next, you know, part of why Jim Nill is confident is there's probably a number that he already knows gets this done, right?
And
but
also,
he
like,
may be, say again?
Yeah, sorry. And also, like I said, that he's relaxed, but I have also the theory that why is he so relaxed and so confident? Because maybe this is some sort of a blessing in disguise, and really bear with me on this. As I think they'll give all the space they could provide for Johnston and Stankoven to really like make their point of staying in the NHL, because as you said, and that's totally right, Jim Neal probably, or really realistically, now has only space for a bridge deal. I mean, it's more than 6 million. I think it's around 7.8 if you count Dobby in minors. But
Obviously, there are some pieces they could probably buy out if they had to. Like there's some cash around.
But Jimmy is really, really big into contract layering. And the Johnston and Stankoven thing here is pretty interesting, because if one of them is staying in the NHL, they would need their big deals or their bridge deals or whatever in 3 years. But we also have Marek Borg, who will need next deal in 3 years. So that's why maybe Jim Neal is kind of a bit of a waiting mode to see if maybe Johnston makes the team and stays for the full season, because there he will have Oettinger, Borg, and Johnston all due in 3 years. And that's when he knows that he can offer Robertson 4 years. And vice versa. If Johnston doesn't make the team and Stankoven is sent to the WHL, then he can confidently offer Robertson 3 years. So that's why I think that he already has the number, and he's willing to sacrifice maybe few days of the regular season just to see if the guys are ready. Mm-hmm. And from that on, he will know if to offer Robertson 3 or 4 years, because that way he stays an RFA for the Dallas Stars, and Jim Neal can really layer the contracts as he likes to do so. But also, like I also think the best way to do business with Robertson is to sign him long term. But you really need two to tango, right? And his agent would be foolish not to go for a bridge deal and not to like explore the possibilities of cap rise in 2025 or 2026. So that's why I think it's really not all in Jim Neal's hands right now. And crucially and funny enough, I think Wyatt Johnston is a pretty big factor here in Jason Robertson's signing. Believe it or not, it's my theory and I'm sticking to it.
Well, and I read your tweet on that, and my brain had been kind of going down that same line, and I was glad to see somebody else kind of throw it out there. Because if anything, Jim Neal has been known throughout his stay in Dallas as somebody who layers contracts. And that just fits perfectly in with the type of thing that he does. And so I think you're just spot on.
Yeah, exactly. Like, imagine he signed Robo for 3 years, and he already signed Jake for 3 years, and he has Maverick Borg in 3 years. And what if Bia Johnston is so good that you cannot cut him? And what if even Stankoven is so good that you cannot cut him? Then you have 5 stars due for a new contract in summer of 2025, and that's just not proper asset management, if you ask me.
It's not. And if he can get away with it, I think he will. Flip side of that is it's been layered well enough that that's signing 5 stars is a good problem to have, considering that same offseason you'll drop 1, 2, 3. You know, there's 4 coming off the books that year, you know, the ones we talked about. And then you've got the Marchment deal just running 1 additional year. And by that point, you've even got line of sight into the end of, you know, Sagan's deal only runs through, you know, 2026, 27, right? So even if I agree with you, right? Obviously layering is good. We've always on the podcast banged the drum of Jim Neal. You can say what you want about individual deals, but when you look at the Dallas cap situation as a whole, he has almost always managed to juggle things just with a deft expert touch. And I think even in a situation where, oh my gosh, there's 5 guys that just demand to be, you know, in the roster and paid and all of that, you can still look at the roster and there's still a lot of flexibility. And no, it wouldn't be ideal, but it would be manageable.
I mean, I disagree, kinda.
Okay.
I know for a new guy, it's
It's no, probably, come at me. I have no, I have no special knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, I went really through a rabbit hole, and I mean, for the summer of 2025, you will have these contracts of Lindell and Jamie Benn coming off, but you would also have new contract of Roope Hintz, possibly even Nils Lundqvist and Thomas Harley on the books. So, I mean, there is space, but there is not so much space that people actually think there will be. So it's pretty tight exercise that I did. And I was really deep into the predictions. And that's why I also did the article, because I think it's worth to mention that, yeah, the cap is rising, but it's not that much money if you really go like contract by contract. And it's really a good problem to have, like, to, let's say, as you said, have five stars to sign. But if it were to happen in the same summer, they will probably need to trade a guy like maybe Goriano, if he's still here, or maybe Mason Marchman, as you said, or maybe some other guy. And ideally, you want to wait for a cap to rise even more. So that means it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if Stankoven returns to the VHW and win a Memorial Cup with Kamloops.
Yeah.
And I would totally understand if they sent Johnston after 9 games to Windsor, because then they could layer it up better. And in 2026, the cap will rise probably even more than to 92.5. So I think it would be pretty savvy from Jim Neal or maybe even other GM that will be here at that time to not have everything in one summer, because it could be like the perfect storm or it could be really disastrous for the Stars. That's just what I think.
Yeah, and 26 is kind of a weird year, because right now that, you know, it is off in the future, but Marchman's contract's really the only one of any size that's so far coming off in 26.
Yeah, and let's not forget that the current CBA actually runs out in the summer of 2026, and there is a possibility of a lockout in the 26-27 season. Yeah. But I think we are getting way too ahead of ourselves right now.
Yeah, I mean, all of this stuff is fun, but at a certain point, a big trade just messes up all the logic. And Jim Neal has been known to throw some pretty big trades out there every once in a while.
Yeah, and he'll have, in your scenario, there it is potentially a situation where Dallas is going to have assets, right? And they may not, right? This is the time of season, this time of year where everything is optimistic and, you know, all the flowers are blooming and all of that. But, you know, it's hard to not, you know, I don't want to say that they'll be challenging for the cup this coming year, but it's hard to look at the future of this team and not at least be a little bit thrilled, right?
Yeah. Yeah, how about we get this a little more specific? We have a bunch of forwards that are still with the team. I think the basic thought is that we have 9 or 10 that are kind of locks, if you include Peterson as a lock. Mm-hmm. Who else of the people who are fighting for a position do you see making the NHL roster?
I do not think that we're going to see Bork or Stankoven on the opening day roster. I think that with Bork, the fact that they can send him to the AHL and give him a primary role there, he's kind of, you know, his bar to entry is much higher because the team has higher level options for which to deal with him, right? And I think as well, they seem to really like the energy that Stankoven brings and seem to really like his tenacity. But again, I think he's another one of those guys that probably has to do a little bit more because there's a value at his size in getting him another year to build strength, you know, put on weight, develop physically, all of those things. So I think those two feel like the most likely to go down for various circumstances. I still think that we break camp with Johnston on the lineup, unless he falls off a cliff or, you know, unless they really struggle or I just, there's a vibe, man.
Yeah. And I agree with you. With the caveat that I think if Robertson's signed and is ready to go, I think Robertson just takes that spot and Johnston goes back to the OHL.
Yeah, it's a possibility, but also count injuries that could happen. I mean, what happened to Ty Dellandrea was, I mean, I was so unhappy for this because he's one of my favorite players on the team and he was playing like out of his mind. He was playing probably his best hockey in Stars jersey. But his injury is really an opportunity for some and one free roster spot for.
Yeah. Well, and here's kind of my take on Landry.
Landry is looking at probably 2 to 3 weeks is what I'm seeing on the sidelines. And yeah, given this time of year at that point, you know, they seem to really like him. There was a comment, I can't remember if it was by Neil Graham or Pete DeBoer, but basically saying he kind of proved everything he needed to prove last year in the AHL. But again, this is a guy that can go down, that does have that option. And I think given the timeline of his recovery, I feel like the smart play for both the player and the team is he starts the season in the A working his way back.
Well, and I'll throw something else out there. I saw the quote from DeBoer who said he had him penciled into the lineup. I don't think that changes. What I think happens is that the Stars head into the season with 13 forwards on the roster with a open spot that DeLandry is going to fill, and they have a road game at Nashville. Then they're home with Nashville, and then a home game at Winnipeg. So the first week of the season, they really can just play with 13 forwards. And so I think they accumulate a little cap space, and then DeLandry goes on the road with the team when they head on out after that first three games.
And also there is like this, there are other like guys on the fringe with Marian Studenich, maybe Joel Kiviranta is still on the fence. I mean, Riley Tufte is no longer waiver exempt, so he will probably need to go through waivers, and I think that he will. The question is if there is a team that will snag him. I mean, he's also former first round pick, but if I were to like bet my money, I think nobody would claim him as of right now, because I mean, his play didn't warrant it to stay on the NHL team, even though he's not waiver eligible anymore or waiver exempt anymore. Sorry. And I really think that it all like comes down to guys also Fredrik Karlström or even like maybe possibility of Logan Stankoven and giving him at least one or two games of the NHL. Mm-hmm. and maybe they want to do that because he is in no rush to go to Kamloops because the Memorial Cup doesn't start it until next year. And if Jason Robertson is not signed, there is also another free roster spot for, and maybe we can see Stankoven and Johnston making the opening night only for them to go back to the juniors. I mean, there are all kinds of possibilities here, and that's what is actually pretty exciting, because nothing is guaranteed for at least those nine guys that are pretty much penciled in, and nothing will be happening with them probably, bearing some trades or injuries. So it's pretty exciting time on the forwards, good, but also on the defense. So
yeah, the competition's been great. I think the one name that we've all missed because nobody's really seen him play unless he went to training camp is Freddie Olofsson. You know, he played one game up in Tulsa. He's going to play up in Kansas City, but this is a guy who's 26. His AHL or his two-way deal pays him the same at the AHL level as it does at the NHL level. And so this is a contract that the Stars signed with a general feeling that he's ready to go. And I think he's a real wild card in this situation because nobody who isn't pretty deep into the Stars has really seen what he brings to the table.
So what do you think he brings to the table, in your opinion?
I've only seen clips of him play. I didn't see the game in Tulsa, and I'm not going to have a chance to see anything in Kansas City tonight. And otherwise, you haven't seen him play. He didn't play at Traverse City.
Yeah, I mean,
wild card.
From what I saw from Swedish Hockey League, I mean, he was their go-to power play option. And I'm not so sure if he fits in the bottom six in the NHL, but he wouldn't have anywhere else to play, probably. That's why I think he'll go down to Texas and maybe to get used to the US-style hockey and also like the smaller ring, etc. So I'm not overly concerned about him staying in the NHL or for the opening night. I mean, he could be an option if he proves himself like for the first 1 or 2 months in the A. But to me, he's not a factor to make the opening night roster, but only not because he's not good enough. I mean, he could probably be on many other teams, but the Stars have so much forwards, like also other forwards who can make the team, and he can go to the AHL. He can be waived. He can go like without going through waivers. And I mean, he really probably needs also like more games because he also has some sort of a minor injury during the training camp. So, I mean, a month or two in the AHL wouldn't do him bad. The same goes for Mathieu Blumel, who was pretty good from what I gathered. And but he has time. He has 2 years of his contract, and I think it's a great decision that they send him to the AHL. Also, my Czech friends who are following hockey and NHL were pretty surprised and shocked, because they for sure thought that he was gonna make the team, because they like him so much. I mean, he was great for the national team in Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. He was great also in Czech League, although the points didn't really pop up so much, but his underlying numbers were terrific, really. And,
well, I think there's a role question as well. Like, to me, we sometimes fall into this habit of looking at call-ups as binary, right? If you're in the AHL, you're worse than if you're in the NHL, right? Because one league is higher than the other, therefore one league is better. And in some instances that's true, but in some it's a little bit reductive. So, you know, thinking about the way that players profile, and you had mentioned, I believe it was talking to Olofsson, but you had mentioned how, you know, being an option on the power play was a part of the player's skill set, right? And when you look at the Stars and the way that they're going to evaluate that player, that's probably part of their calculus, right? Is this is a guy that we project to play this role on the power play. Therefore, we need to get an idea of how he's going to play on the power play, right? And when you look at the NHL roster, there are not a ton, you know, you've already got, you know, your Sagans and your Benge, your Pavelskis, your Henses, your Robertsons once he signs, you know, Heiskanen, you know, there are some guys that are going to be there. And then you get into your tier two number, you know, your tier two guys. And DeBoer had a comment about Denis Gurianov that I thought was really interesting, talking about moving him away from that bumper position because, you know, you want Gurianov to shoot, right? That's his whole deal. And DeBoer kind of talked about wanting to make sure he got a look in a role that he felt was, you know, better to the player. And on the defensive side of things, right, Thomas Harley, you probably want to find some minutes, and Lundqvist as well, right? So it's when you start looking at those kind of down tier players, going to the AHL is not necessarily a demotion so much as it's that calculus of, if I want to evolve, if I want to develop you as a power play option, I need you to be on a roster that is going to allow you to play on a power play, right? And if that's not the NHL, you have to get into the, you know, and I don't always agree with these decisions, but you start getting into the calculus of like, well, you know, if is it more valuable to have a guy practicing and not getting to play a certain role, but being in the NHL versus, you know, potentially not being in the NHL, but getting to be in a role that is more, you know, more projectable, more in line with what you want him to do ultimately.
Exactly. I mean, he's the perfect guy to really look into for 1 or 2 months in AHL. So that's why I said that I don't see him on the opening night roster, but not because he's not good. I mean, he is also speedy. He had really good season in Sweden, but let's say one of the guys from the PP2 actually got injured, and probably he's a better option to put there instead than, let's say, Radek Faksa or something, or somebody like that. So maybe, and also it's really a good thing of Jim Neal to really surround the team with guys like Olofsson, because he's really good depth guy and really good alternative when injury bugs actually hits the team. So I'm looking forward to watch him like closely, but I think he could be a factor later in the season, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, and I think exactly what you're saying there, Wes, is one of the reasons why I think that both Kivi Ranta and Student Nietzsche make the ultimate NHL roster, because we see where they fit and we know that they can produce down on in a fourth line role, especially if it's a fourth line role that's supposed to bring some energy with the potential of scoring. And I think both of those guys have the ability to do that, but they can also miss games on a fairly regular basis if they don't have a spot that day.
Yeah, like think about DeBoer, right? He's heading into a season where he's got to figure out his offense, right? This has not been traditionally a high-scoring team. He's got question marks in Ben and in Sagan, and you know, he's got work to do in the top six. So just from a, like, I have a certain number of hours each day to trouble myself with this roster standpoint, he's probably going to your point, look at that bottom six as guys that, like you said, like he can, if Marian Studenik goes a week and, you know, sits twice and doesn't get any power play time, Pete DeBoer is not going to have, you know, whether it's media, whether it's the player private, like he's not going to have drama to deal with because of that decision, right? Where if he brings up maybe a player with more offensive upside, if you know, a guy like Maverick Bork breaks camp with the team and all of a sudden is eating scratches and not playing and, you know, scoring minutes, then all of a sudden maybe it doesn't matter. I'm not Pete DeBoer. I don't know, but it matters more. There's going to be more inquiry to having certain guys underutilized on the roster, even if those guys have a higher ceiling than guys on the roster being utilized kind of in line with a more limited skill set.
Yeah. And I think just overall what we're seeing is I don't know the last time we could say that we saw guys being pushed down the depth chart. And we've seen that in the forward group. I think we've probably seen it more with the defense. And we may want to transition to the defense because I think there's some interesting head-to-head battles that have kind of been set up here for that. There's really two slots, I think, that are open. And I think one of those spots is between Lundqvist and Harley. And I think the other spot is one that's going to end up being between Hanley and Will Butcher. And I think those two spots are just there for the grabbing. And now, I haven't seen Butcher or Hanley play yet, so that one's wide open as far as I can tell. But Lundqvist looks like he's reaching out and grabbing a spot.
In that and, you know, the last time out, all of a sudden, Miro's on his strong side. And there's been a very vocal contingent of Starsdom that have been clamoring for that since practically, you know, since he's been on the roster. So, yeah, I mean, there's not only, like, as an individual, if Lundqvist grabs a spot, that helps Dallas. They need him to do that desperately. But to your point about the depth chart, it all of a sudden you see cascading effects, right? It's not just that they need Lundqvist to be good because they need one more good defenseman. They do. But if Lundqvist is good enough to play on a pairing with Miro Heiskanen, then all of a sudden you can slide Heiskanen to a strong, and you might find yourself in a situation where you're starting to get a, you know, like getting amplifying benefits.
And the thing is, you know, you got people talking about Harley's NHL ready. Well, you know, you aren't going to put Harley in that number seven slot. If Harley can't beat Lundqvist, he's playing in the A.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's one of the things that probably some Stars fans will be mad about, but, I'm honestly right now expecting Thomas Harley to start the season in the AHL. Like, and that's not a slight against him. I mean, he's good. I mean, and I hope he makes the team at the opening night. But there is, like, man, there is so much crowd, like, just waiting for the spots. And the question whether they waive Butcher or Hanley is moot point for me. Like, but you have six NHL options if Nils Lundqvist is actually ready. And let's say he plays with Miro on the first pairing. You can then pair Essa with Colin Miller, who appears as a steady right-handed D, and he could actually even drive some plays because we know Essa is not really capable of doing that, and he was sometimes like he was partnered with Klingberg mainly because John was taking his game to another level. Like, I mean, Essa's Lindos, and he was helping him, and Essa probably needs that kind of help. And Colin Miller may not be at the John Klingberg level, but he can do something. And then you have Ryan Suter and Jani Hakampa, who were pretty much staples last season. And I don't expect like either of them to be benched to start the season. So, I mean, I totally agree that rather than having Thomas Harley sitting in the press box, just send him to the AHL because he's waiver exempt. And it's not really about the waiver exemption. It's also about the playing minutes that he could play there. I mean, he can play 25 minutes a night, maybe even 30. He can play on power play, and he can even try some PK, like, to really establish himself as an all-around defenseman one day. So
exactly, Joel Hanley can play once a week, and nobody cares. Yeah, and that's not a slight against Joel Hanley, right? But you know exactly what you're going to get, and riding the pine doesn't seem to swing that way, but you're exactly right. Thomas Harley is exactly what we've been talking about. And he's a guy that personally, I hope that he is good enough to make the team and factor into the team. Maybe, you know, maybe not top four overall, but I hope my best case is he's a guy that contributes on the power play. And there's a spot for, you know, there's always a spot for a puck moving defenseman in the modern NHL, right? But to your point, if he's not there yet, it is much more valuable for Harley to be the number one defenseman for the Texas Stars and play in all situations and continue to round and develop his game at this stage, right? He's 21 at this stage, than it is for Thomas Harley to be a 6, 7, 8 flex on the NHL team, potentially not playing every night and having to battle with other guys for special teams time.
Exactly. And I think he can do the John Klingberg, that he will be so good in the NHL that they just don't have any option just to call him up. And probably he could also force them to trade somebody. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget that Colin Miller had some problems with his health. And I don't like the label, that, but he's also a little bit injury prone. So if
he's Colin also Miller... making $1.8 million. And it's only a 2-year deal. So, you know, Colin Miller is not going to, you know, it's one of those like if Thomas Harley is playing great, Colin Miller is not going to be the reason. I said this about the, you know, the deal that they signed Braden Holtby to last season, right? If Thomas Harley is, you know, all that in a bag of chips, right, comes out of the gates playing like gangbusters, ready to go, then yeah, ideally you don't spend almost $2 million on a guy you're not going to use, but neither Pete DeBoer nor Jim Nill are going to bat an eye looking at it and saying, well, Colin, you know, Thomas is playing out of his mind. You know, good luck, right? That's a deal you can eat without any concern or any problem.
Yeah.
And you're not going to force somebody out of the lineup because you have to play Colin Miller and $1.85 million.
Exactly. I mean, and if they are not really pushed against the wall, like cap wise, Colin Miller is your ideal seventh defenseman, like in my opinion, and he's better option than Joel Hanley. Although I know there are some people who really love Joel Hanley, and his also underlying statistics are awesome. But and he makes like $1 million less. So if there wants to, if Jim Neal wants to save some cap, I mean, he could try to sneak Colin Miller to the waivers any day, and somebody might even claim him. So I'm really also not too worried about that.
Yeah, and if somebody claims him, it's not like you've lost a cornerstone piece of your lineup, right? This is not to denigrate Colin Miller. I hope that he contributes to the Dallas Stars this season. But in this scenario where Thomas Harley is playing so well that he can't go down and you have to risk losing Colin Miller, like, okay, that's not going to set the franchise back.
Exactly.
Right, and it kind of goes to the point. I mean, you know, we've been talking about Harley and Harley kind of, you know, last year you would think he was having his roster spot just kind of handed it to him. But this year, this team at the NHL level and really now even at the AHL level has developed some incredible depth. And I mean, you're talking about, we sent people to Traverse City, and we may have one of the guys at Traverse City who actually gets any kind of reasonable time at the AHL. I mean, this team is incredibly deep, especially at defense.
I mean, exactly. When I'm coming to the DFW area sometime next year, just to see Dallas Stars live, actually for the first time in my life, I'm definitely trying to make the trip also down to Austin and try to figure out a schedule around that way, because the Texas Stars teams probably will be loaded also on the forward side. Let's say they have Blumel, they probably will have Bork. We mentioned Olofsson, but there are so many other interesting pieces. But also on D, they are so deep. And I am also pretty intrigued about Matt Murray, so in net. So, I mean, that team is definitely is going to make playoffs, I think. And that's the best thing that they could do, like, for the development of players like Maverick Bork. And that's why I think Jim Neal signed the guys like Fredrik Olofsson, just to give the guys some shot to make some noise in playoffs in the AHL. And really, nothing really develops you better than the playoff hockey, be it in the AHL or be it in the juniors even. That's also why I think Wyatt Johnston, Logan Stankov, and also Bork are so prepared, because they had their long playoff runs last season. So
I'm going back even further, right? Jamie Benn had a run to the Calder Cup final with the Texas Stars once upon a time, right? And I remember getting a chance to see him play several times, and you can very much draw some, you know, you can look at the player that he was as, I think he was still a teenager at this point, but you could look at the player that Jamie Benn was in the AHL. And in my personal opinion, that experience very much translated to the success he's had at the NHL level.
Oh yeah, I mean when they sent him down just to play playoff, I mean that was unfair against against the teams that he was playing against. So, but yeah, I mean that definitely helped him, and that's what I mean. I think they are hoping that the same thing could happen with guys like Maverick Bourque, or let's say the Wyatt Johnston doesn't make the team, although I think he will, and I hope also he will. If his season at Windsor ends early, he can join the AHL team and also make some noise in playoffs there. So there are plenty of opportunities. And the season, once in the summer, I thought it was pretty discouraging that they didn't make any moves like to replace Klingberg and so forth. But now I'm pretty excited about the season, both in the NHL and AHL level.
Yeah, fully agree. Hey, let's take just a little bit of time and let's talk a bit about the goalie situation. Different talk than we had last year. We have Oettinger as number one. We have Anton Hudobin's gotten a little time. In my personal opinion, I think people have been a little harsh on somebody who maybe had a major surgery and is just getting back into game shape. But we have Hudobin. We have Wedgewood, which is intriguing, if nothing else, from the salary cap point of view, and maybe the trade market, and then as Yark was saying, we have Matt Murray and Adam Scheele down at the AHL level, so we're starting to get a little bit of depth there as well.
Which history tells us the Dallas Stars need goalie depth. No, and I tend to agree with you in terms of Hudobin. Yeah, in a perfect world, he plays lights out, and Dallas is maybe looking at him heading into the season as a potential, you know, silver bullet to solve some of their cap angst. You know, if you could get that full hit off the books, then maybe you do have enough money to coax Robertson into something that isn't a bridge, but that seems to be wishful thinking. But yeah, I think, you know, you're hoping that, you know, if I'm Jim Nill, you know, you always plan for the worst, right? So I'm trying to hedge myself against what if Wedgewood doesn't show out over the full season like he did in his kind of cameo, right? What if Jake Oettinger has normal goalie growing pains, and what if Hudobin isn't back at all or isn't back all the way, right? That's three guys, and you can probably get a full season with those. You know what I mean? Like that's probably enough coverage.
Yeah, if they wouldn't be so cap constrained, I mean, Anton Hudobin would be the perfect third guy to have on the team. And also, I understand some people that they are mad that he's not as good at this, hey, they would hope, just so we can trade him. But I mean, from the personal level, it's not his fault that his cap is so high. I mean, I would also sign the contract if I were him. And also injuries happen. So I really hope he's good, not just because we can trade the contract, not at all. I mean, I hope we can, because that would really alleviate some pain, and probably even could make us players to sign Jason Robertson long term. But also from his personal perspective, and also probably Jim Neal knows that depth is really important, and we are really one injury of goalie away from potentially being a big catastrophe. Like, let's say, I don't want to jinx this, but let's say Jake is out for 3 weeks and we have Wedgewood, and then who if the Hudobin is not here? So I mean
we have the last two seasons to illustrate this, right? Without Jake Oettinger, right, last season is a catastrophe.
Exactly.
Without Anton Hudobin, the season before that is a catastrophe. So we have very real very recent examples of why you can't, and that's not just a Dallas Stars thing. In my opinion, the entire NHL has made this turn, right? But that's how we get, you know, the modern NHL, right? You don't need two goalies. You need more.
Oh, you need three. I mean, it also, it's also one thing that I don't really understand about the NHL, that why can't you have three goalies like you have in European football? Like, You have a first starting goalie, you have one on the bench, and then you have a reserve goalie.
I will tell you that the most common reason that I've heard is when you get into like practice time and development time, the NHL coaches are notorious bleeding edge, you know,
thinkers, so grain of salt, right? Said very, very sarcastically. But the typical line is carrying three goalies means that those three goalies get less time to refine and to develop. And it's the trade-offs have historically been perceived as more harmful than good.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I also heard from some guys who were on the taxi squads when the COVID season was happening that it was probably the worst for them, like to be like on the fence, like not playing in the AHL and also not being not being on the bench for the NHL, but just from the, let's say, practical perspective, like for the team. Yeah, but you have a point that it will be probably bad for the players and good for the team. But I digress.
I mean, maybe that's where maybe a player like Anton Khudobin, like a veteran, right? It may be less bad. Who knows, right? Goalies like to play.
Yeah, I think. In European football, well, like most of your third string goalies are like those 35, 38 year old guys that probably don't even thinking about playing, that they are just there just to be there. And they are happy with it. And probably Anton would be the case as well. But if his cap hit was like 900K, but his cap hit is so big that it's become really probably some sort of a pain for Jim Neal as well. But I mean, as we said, or as I said, like from the personal perspective, and also I think Jim Neal shares this view that he wishes nothing but the best for Anton Khudobin. And he wanted to give him all the chance that he could, not only to prove himself for the other team, but also for himself. I mean, he deserves at least that, like for that cup run, or should I say finals run. But I definitely think that there could be some team that could claim him because he's only has 1 year left on his deal, and Arizona just claimed Jonas Johansson. So like everything is possible, and maybe he's playing the waiting game to see if there is some big injury for some team. I mean, yeah, we do not wish anybody that, but it will happen because there's just a rule of law in NHL that injuries happen. And Anton Khudobin could be the potential problem solver for some team. And maybe Jim Neal is still quietly banking on that as well. But, I mean, having Jake Oettinger and Scott Wedgewood is like ideal scenario also from the cap perspective. But that's ideal only if they are healthy. And if not, then the problem arises. So I understand why Jim Neal is playing this sort of a waiting game also with Jason Robertson, also with Anton Khudobin, because I still think there is no place to rush. It's October 1st right now, and he still has like two more weeks to evaluate
things. Yeah, last season, we were having the same conversation about, God, why do they need Oettinger, Holtby, and Khudobin, right? Like we were having that fight.
Yep. Well, let me throw one monkey wrench in here before we wrap up. All of the viewing that we've done of these goaltenders has been under Rick Bonus, which plays defense and almost tries to create offense out of defense. Pete DeBoer is bringing something else. There's an entirely different train of thought that might say that the goaltenders are going to have to prove themselves in a defensive scheme that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how Oettinger is going to perform under that scheme. I think he's going to be pretty good. You know, how much of Wedgewood's numbers, though, were based on the fact that he got into a system that was very regimented and took shots from the outside? So, again, I think there are maybe some unknowns that we haven't thought all the way through that we'll see and hopefully not discover some problems once we get into the season.
It is a great point. I mean, the Pete DeBoer's teams are not bad defensively. I mean, the Vegas team that he had was also pretty good defensively, and the goalies had great numbers. I mean, but just from the perspective of Jake Oettinger, who had great numbers on the first side last season, but he didn't save that much goals above expected during the regular season. So you could make a point that the defense structure helped him a bit, but then on the other hand, in playoffs, he saved so many goals above expected that he even broke some records, I think. And the same goes for Scott Wedgewood. I mean, he was playing for Arizona, and they didn't have any defensive structure at all. So I think these guys actually do better when there are more shots at them and they are like in more tempo during the game. And the same goes probably for Anton Hudobin. Like the more shots he faces, the better he is. So I'm not overly concerned about that. And given the De Boer, let's say, statistic throughout his career that his goalies generally perform quite well, I think the guy should be adapting quite nicely to that. But you make a good point that nothing is for certain. And it's true that bonus system and even before the Montgomery system helped goalies a bit. So we'll see if this change may or may not change some things.
Right, I'm just saying.
You could also make the point that having more goals to work with could also be, you know, you can help goalies in different ways, right? One way I can help you if you're my goalie is making sure that you never see a quality shot against, and that's a way, and it's a very good way, it's a very effective way.
Yeah,
the
also,
other way I can help you if you're my goalie is if we always have the puck and if we always have a 2-goal lead, you're also going to be in pretty good shape.
Exactly, just score more goals. That's right. that's how you help your goalies. Basically.
How haven't they figured this out yet? We get all the answers here on Stargazing.
Just score more goals and you win some games.
It's interesting. And the last thing I'll say, and then I want to get a hot take out of both of you before we hit the road, is there's one of those apocryphal sayings that circulates in hockey where the saying is always nobody really cares until the second week of preseason. Right. That's when you start getting no more of the split squad nonsense. A lot of the fringe guys are back to their minor teams. Right. Nobody really cares until it's the second week, which is what we're. So this is when we should start to see things really begin to coalesce into what the team is going to look like when the games matter.
Yeah. I mean, the home against Colorado should be pretty telling. I mean, there were some guys who said like the Roope Hintz and Joel Pavelski line with Jacob Peterson was quiet during the first preseason season. And during the first preseason game, and I was like, yeah, I mean, why should they bother, right? Because it's like first preseason game, like they are there, just need to keep the pace up, but they are not there to kill themselves for the goal or for the win. And but somebody almost killed Roope Hintz on the other hand, so that's why I think it's pretty good of them to just take their time, and really now is the time to crank it up a bit. But again, like the season is so long, the 82 games is way too much to my liking. Also for the players, and then there's potential playoffs. So I'm really not too concerned about that at all.
How about you, Mark? Any closing thoughts?
Oh, I'm kind of ready for this all to start.
Yeah.
So that's my final thought.
I can't put it any better than that. We are as well, but you know, great. It's a good scorching. I think the Stars are in a good spot. Overall, there's a lot of questions to answer. There's certainly nothing, you know, nothing is a given. But
so you're saying you like where the team's at?
I like, right? Where we're at. Oh, that's exactly. You're already mid-season form. That's exactly where I was going. I like where we're at. I'll like it even more when they get Robertson signed. That's going to be my hot take, because I think that by this time next week, I'm putting a bounty out. I think that they get Robertson signed before the season starts.
Okay, I think they do not. I think they start without him. And that's my hot take, and I would be so happy if I'm wrong, but I know this is the hottest take probably I could make, but it could be blessing in disguise, really. If he misses like 2 or 3 games of the regular season, he did miss like 6 games last season, and nobody even flinched at the end of the season, that, and nobody probably even remembered that Jason Robertson missed like 6 games to start the season. So
What if a Robertson holdout solidifies the Hintz Gurianov Marchment line and allows Robertson to create a second skull? Oh, man, galaxy brain. This is nice. Mark, you better get something sizzling here.
I have something absolutely sizzling. It is Saturday afternoon and there's football on.
There it is.
You know, actually for me it's already Sunday, but yeah.
There's football on Sunday too.
Well, it is delightful to have you with the site and on the podcast. I'm very excited about having you
for this upcoming season and beyond. Mark, always a pleasure. There are not enough superfluous things I can say about you. Really looking forward to getting into the year. And KT, as always, working her magic behind the scenes to keep the Stargazing podcast the absolute best and brightest in all of Starsdom. Please don't forget to like us, follow us on the socials, download us, read us, do all of the things. But most importantly, don't forget to watch the games and love the team. And we cannot wait to start talking once all this stuff matters.